Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Today, of course, is our Worldview Wednesday edition of the program, and that's going to fit very well with some of the issues that we're looking at today. First up, we're going to speak with Sophia Lee. Sophia has she writes for World Magazine, and she's written a very interesting article about mental illness. And as you know, this is something that's in the news quite a bit in our day and age. There's a lot of discussion going on about this subject and what should be done about it, and what are some of the pathologies associated with it. So we're going to talk about that. And she's written a very personal story about a young man by the name of Seth. And so her story is entitled Saving Seth, and it deals with mental illness and an Arizona family's struggle with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. We're going to be talking about that on the first half of the program then today. Obviously, today is also the day after the great debate. And so last night, of course, we had the debate between Ken Ham and Bill Nye. I'm sure many people in our listening audience watched that debate or listened to that debate or read some of the things that were written about it here this morning. I've got a couple of comments that I put out about the debate and my take on it as well. I want to talk about that on the second half of the program, and I want to give you the opportunity to comment on it as well. Let me give you the number right at the very top of the program, 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. We are streaming live out on sermonaudio.com, so you can check us out there, or you can also listen to the audio only at Christian Talk 660, or if you're listening, of course, on the airwaves, 92.9 or 660 on the AM. With that, let's go ahead and welcome Sophia into the discussion today. Sophia, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
Sophia, are you out there in California?
Yes, in Los Angeles.
Okay, that's what I thought. I noticed in the short bio that they have there on World Magazine, it mentioned that you graduated from University of Southern California, but I didn't know if you were still stationed out there with World Magazine. Interesting article that you've written here about the subject of mental illness. Why don't you start by helping our listeners, I think it's about 4 pages long on the Internet, if I'm reading it online. So give us a little bit of a summary, first of all, as to what you wrote about, and then we can start working through it a little bit to talk about some of the issues that you raise.
Okay, sure. When I wrote about serious mental illnesses, which is about 7.7 million American adults right now have severe mental illness. And about half of them have not receive treatment in any given year. And these are the half that are really slipping through the cracks in society. And it reflects a lot of brokenness in society and in the policies in place that are not helping these people. So what the article does is it kind of just follows one family that has stories that represent basically what's going on in the entire nation. And so I follow a young man called Seth Giesling, and I talked to his mother, Deborah, and they live in Phoenix, Arizona. And Seth has schizoaffective disorder, which means he has both schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And he showed symptoms since he was about 14. And basically, I followed through how his parents really trying to find him treatment, but it doesn't really work because a lot of these people with serious mental illnesses, at least half of them, have anosognosia, which means they have lack of insight. They don't realize that they're sick. So how do you make these people take their medicines when they don't believe they're sick?
Mm-hmm.
And you're basically asking them to take medicine that makes them feel really bad. A lot of people who take this medicine just don't feel like themselves, and they go through really all sorts of ways to not have the medicine, like vomiting it up or lying about it or throwing it away. And that's a huge problem because without the medicine, they get psychotic. And it reflects a lot of, okay, so it's really actually it's quite complex, which is why the article is quite long.
Yes, it said that this was going to be your first article on this subject. It sounds like this is going to be a series of some sort. Is that correct?
Right. It's actually just a two-part series.
Okay.
So there's a second series coming out about what the government is not doing and what the church is not doing to help these people.
Well, that's an interesting discussion that we need to have. Basically, in your article, you're saying that there are many, many people, 100,000 mentally ill individuals that don't end up doing something that makes the news, you know, like you start off with Jared, is it Lautner?
Right.
He made the news because of his murderous acts. But there's many people that don't, of course. And there doesn't seem to be, then, because they're out of the public eye, there hasn't been that much discussion about how, whether the treatment or the policies or, you know, the approach to mental illness is really working. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that is quite fair.
Now, you start off there with Lautner, but as you're going through telling his story, you mentioned there that I think that I read in the article, if I remember right, that the policies and the help that is there for individuals in Arizona is actually one of the best in the country. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
So
that's because they have a law called Arnold v. Sun, which the thing about anosognosia, as I said, a lot of them have lack of insight.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of states don't allow families to force them to have treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they do need involuntary treatment because they don't believe that they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
So Arizona, they allow people with mental disorders to have court order evaluation and treatment if they are considered a danger to self, a danger to others, gravely disabled, or persistently or acutely disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person continuously shows signs of mental disorders, then they can be involuntarily treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little bit conflicted on this myself because I'm a little bit concerned about other people making that diagnosis that, you know, that you are mentally ill. I'd like to know what that criteria is and if it's made objectively, you know, because now we're talking once that determination is made, we're getting to the point here where we're talking about forced treatment, you know. So the individual, as you said, they don't want to take the medicine because it makes them feel really bad. I don't know what you were referring to there, whether it makes them feel groggy or disoriented or depressed or any of a number of things that they feel as a result of it. But others are then making the decision that you will be forced to take this medication And if you don't take the medication, or even if you do in some cases, you may be institutionalized as well. So I understand that, you know, certainly if we determine that a person is dangerous to themselves or to others, that a case could be made for that. But I'm just a little bit concerned about that being a slippery slope where who's making that determination, and could, you know, could this open up a Pandora's box to we're putting people away that don't really deserve to be there. So it's very, very complicated, as you mentioned.
Right, it is. I mean, forced treatment, that itself puts people into allergies because, I mean, it sounds really nasty, and it's just so against our American ideal of, you know, liberty and freedom. But, I mean, we have to really be careful here. Usually when people do go into psychotic break, they are put into a hospital, and they are watched for about 24 hours or more than that to make sure that they, so that they constantly can watch them and really diagnose them. And the problem is that a lot of these people, I mean, some people, once they take the meds, they are fine. And some people do get better. They become functional people in society. But some people just get worse without constant observation and constant help and making sure that they take their medicine. And then they just go through this carousel of going back to the hospital and then being forced to take treatment, going back home, but then they're not taking the meds, so they go back to the hospital again. So, I mean, a lot of these people that we don't hear about are going through this kind of cycle.
Yes.
Well, so what is the best, you know, answer for them?
Well, what other angle to this, Sophia, too, that has recently come to light is that many people are actually now pointing towards the medication itself as being more of a problem than the mental illness. I remembered with some of the shootings that took place, all of them, you know, that or pretty much all of them that took place, they saw that the person had some sort of background with mental illness. But they also noted in many of those cases that all of them were on some sort of medication associated with it. And people began to wonder, you know, could the medication itself be a part of what suddenly makes them do violent acts rather than the mental illness itself? Is there some consideration of that in this article as well?
I don't directly address it, but when I was interviewing and doing my research, I mean, the human brain is still very much a mystery to a lot of doctors. It's something so complex that scientists are still trying to find out what they can know about the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to come up with better medicine, you need funding for better research. And I was, all these families I talked to, for example, Seth, they still don't exactly know what is wrong with him. He has been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, but then they still want to run tests on what exactly is going on in the chemical level of his brain. And to find the right medicine for him, it was a test and trial, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't make an accurate diagnosis when you don't understand the organ.
Mm-hmm.
And a mother I talked to was saying that most funds don't go through researching serious mental disorders because they are redirected to other areas and to mental health areas instead of mental illnesses. And that's another case that I do talk about in my next part of the series.
Your article then went. The solutions that you give here in your article is to first of all to let's start listening to the parents of these children primarily that have something going on, to at least hear what their life is like, you know, the hell that they're going through. I can't think of another word in many of these cases. You know, just this terrible things that they're going through, trying to make life as normal as possible, but yet having this this awful thing going on in their life. Is that the first point then in your article to deal with, you know, let's just listen and hear what's going through their lives?
Right, because, I mean, a lot of us are not government workers or policymakers or lawyers or doctors. What can we do to help? I think when I was talking to Deborah, the mother, she said that she told me that I don't need pity or I don't need people to give me money or whatever. I just need people to be able to understand where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And to show love and comfort and support when we need it. Because, I mean, a lot of these families are just stuck in an impossible situation. So what can the community do to help?
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff was going through a psychotic break, and he would run away from home. What really touched me was that his family had an on-call team of pastors that would just go and look for him in their cars. And this team of people, network of people who would be praying for the family, who would greet him in church and try to chat him up. I mean, these little things really do make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, and we've been talking about so far, the situation when the children are under the authority of the parents in the home, but the problem gets even worse once those children become of age and they're liberated out of the home. Who then is going to be responsible for making them take their medicine and those types of things?
Mm-hmm. So my next story actually talks about a man who is 36, and he had a psychotic break when he was about 35. And so usually the state does try to help these people, but then because there are so many people who are seriously mentally ill and they need treatment, but they are not getting the one-to-one individual attention that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them are given money, maybe, given medicine, but they might not take it. They're put in apartments, but then their roommate is mentally ill as well. So it's in a very broken kind of solution here.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned the church being involved, and you mentioned one way that the church was involved there, where they were helping to actually get in their car and go out and try to find the boy when he had run away from home. Is there other ways that you write about that the church can be of assistance?
Yes. For example, the 36-year-old mentally ill man I talked about, he told me that he's really lonely. And, I mean, some of them might get better after their medicine, but they still need mentors. They still need a friend. They still need somebody who's there to spiritually nourish them, and talking to a professor who said that a lot of churches actually turn out abandoning these people who come to church asking for help because of this. This lack of understanding of what a mental illness is.
Mm.
I mean, we put an ugly spiritual crust around a lot of behavioral issues, but when mental illness is actually a neurological disorder. So I think the best churches can do is to form close-knit communities that really intervene when they need to and show these sanctuaries of healing and compassion. And psychiatrists and therapists can help to fix the brain, but who helps to treat the eternal soul?
Mm-hmm.
And back to the church's role, I feel.
Yeah, that's well said there. I think that as you're talking about the church getting involved in that way, obviously there, I would assume, are ministries that are specifically geared towards helping people in these situations, because I'm not sure that because of the nature of the illness and because of the prevalence of them being on various types of medications, I'm not so mm-hmm. sure that, the church embracing that and bringing it into the general populace of the church, or, exposure to other children that are there and stuff, things like that. I don't think we should be foolish about it either. But there mm-hmm. are ministries that I would think that are much more geared to be able to deal with these types of issues. Is that the case?
Yes, and in Seth's case, he has a biblical counselor, one of the pastors in the church, who's actually also his uncle, meets with him regularly, once a week at least, to really counsel him through a biblical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so whatever he's doing, whatever he's going through, he tries to get him to reflect on it in a spiritual way. So I think that a person does need to be treated clinically, but then you need to remember that a person also has the spirit as well, which is the most important component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where you end your article there, and a very interesting note where you talk about the pastor and being involved in biblical counseling and meeting with him and trying to, in a biblical way, to work through those issues that he has mm-hmm. in his life. We're not saying that medication is never needed, but I think that counseling obviously should be an important aspect of this as well in dealing with that. Sophia, thank you so much for writing about this issue. I'm sure that folks in our listening audience that know someone or have had some sort of interaction with this in their life are certainly grateful that we're bringing it up here on the program and talking about it. And I would imagine they're grateful as well for you to be writing about it in World Magazine. So thank you so much for doing that, and thank you for being with us for a little while here on the program.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay. That was Sophia Lee. Sophia writes for World Magazine, and specifically she's located in California, and she writes about a lot of various issues out there on the West Coast, but issues that obviously you could tell from our discussion today have ramifications across the country and indeed around the world. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes. We're going to take a very quick commercial break. When we come back from the commercial break, we're going to go ahead and talk about the debate last night. Did you watch that debate with Bill Nye and Ken Ham? You want to comment on that? You're certainly welcome to do that. You can call the toll-free number here. It's 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Be happy to hear your comment on what was your assessment. Did Ken Ham, quote-unquote, win the debate, or did Bill Nye win the debate? We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.